Hello everyone, how are you doing? If you're new here, I'm Dr. Sheen, an Oxford and Cambridge graduate, a tech entrepreneur and business coach.
And welcome back to the podcast. And today we're going to be doing something a little bit different, a little bit special. We are going to make an exception and actually have a male guest. But listen to me, he deserves to be here. He won his seat, okay? Obviously, there is the need to be inclusive and to take into account all different perspectives, but also it's important to have male voices as part of the dialogue. But our guest himself is pretty cool. He is on a mission to redefine the global structure of education by really defying everything that we know about traditional education systems. But not just education, he is also redefining work culture, well-being, politics. Please join me in welcoming Vishen Lakhiani. Vishen is the founder of Mind Valley, one of the world's largest life transformation platform with over 20 million users across almost 200 countries. And he's the author of two best-selling books. Please welcome Vishen.
I'm so delighted to be here, and I'm so honored to be your first male guest on this podcast.
I know, it is a special place to be, but honestly, you deserve to be here. I've already introduced you, and we are here to hear about you. Tell us about your story.
My story?
Well, yes.
I founded Mind Valley, which
yes.
I was a Silicon Valley computer engineer, quit Silicon Valley because I was so stressed out, I was so bored at my job, I wasn't really feeling fulfilled. I became a teacher of meditation and mind practices, mm-hmm. built a website to support my classes, and this was the Silva method, if anyone is wondering. It was a protocol from the 1960s, and that website grew and grew and grew. It became a media empire called Mind Valley, mm-hmm. and today we are the biggest platform in the world for mind, body, and spirit.
Wow. How does it feel?
It feels pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, I love my job. The thing is, my job keeps me healthy, keeps me spiritually fit, mm-hmm. and keeps me becoming the best damn human being I can be every day because I'm constantly learning. So it's so nice to be in a career where learning is part of your job.
But it must have been such a leap of faith back then, right? When you decided to go out on your own and you knew that you were not feeling fulfilled and you thought you put all of your trust into something that wasn't there.
Right.
So
this is a really important thing. So many people who have regular jobs, they want to quit to try something that you know, they feel kind of deep inside them is their mission. And I always say, go and do this. But when you do this, you must be aware of this phenomenon. If you do anything that's unusual, there's no unpredictability. So when I quit to teach meditation, I was so embarrassed because my friends from my university were doctors, they were lawyers, they had well-paying jobs, and I was broke. And so I even built a website. I had to use a fake name. I didn't want anyone figuring out that, oh, I was selling meditation CDs online in a crummy little website in 2003. But while in the beginning I was earning so much less than my friends, because what I did was unusual, mm-hmm. and it was something that really, that I was passionate about, I was able to accelerate it. And so my income grew and grew and grew. And soon I'd overtaken by 10x, all of my friends who were doctors or lawyers or had jobs with big consulting companies. So the important lesson over here is if you try to do something unusual, you actually have a competitive advantage. People don't get this. It's going to be hard in the beginning because you got to figure things out. But once you figure things out, you have two advantages. First, you're doing something with less competition because it is unusual. It's this crazy idea that you dreamt up. Secondly, if you're passionate about it, you have fuel, you have stamina to plow through it when everyone else is complaining about their jobs. So those crazy ideas, jump on them.
Wow. Yeah. What do they call it? They call it being in a slingshot, right? When you take a risk on yourself,
right.
You're pulling back to be released to go much further.
I've never heard that analogy, but I think it sounds about right.
Right. And well, you'd be happy to know I just resigned from my job to go full time on
into
content.
Podcasting.
Yeah.
Well, think about how many people have built great empires, right? Just going into podcasting. Again, it's not easy, mm-hmm. but it happens. Now, there was a really interesting statistic I read about, which I think is worth mentioning. If you're doing one of these weird things, don't quit your day job. People think you got to quit your day job and go all in. But no, if you do that, you lose your source of money. And then now you're prone to stress and anxiety when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. You're actually 30% more likely to succeed building something new if you do it on nights and weekends and you keep your day job.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I built up my company Mindvalley on nights and weekends, working an extra 2 hours after coming back from my day job, working on the weekend. It took me 1 year before I could quit my day job, but I had flow of money. So there was no stress, mm-hmm. no anxiety. I was safe. Always keep yourself safe.
So when did you know it was now time to go full on this?
So simple. And I love turning this into equations, right? You must calculate your minimal livable income. Mm-hmm. So back then, I was living with my girlfriend in New York. Mm-hmm. And we, as a couple, we were making maybe $7,500 a month. Mm-hmm. We were spending $4,000 a month.
Right.
$4,000 a month is what we needed for food, for to pay our cable bills, to right. pay our internet bills, mm-hmm. for rent. And so 4,000 became that goal. If from my side hustle, I could hit 4,000, my minimal livable income, that's when I could quit. Mm-hmm. And exactly, I hit 4,000 Thanksgiving weekend 2003. And the very next day, I went to my boss and I said, I'm going to quit. You know what he did? He increased my salary by 40%. And it was so tempting. And I almost said, all right, I'm going to quit and maybe stick to this job. But I'm glad I stuck to it. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened was, as soon as I quit my job and I doubled down on my side hustle, in just a few months, that 4,000 went to 8,000. Mm. And now I was making more than my day job. So it's crazy how it worked. But again, don't quit early, because when I first started, I lost money in month one, lost money in month two, and I would have been so stressed out. Mm-hmm. But because I had a day job, I was learning, I had my salary taken care of, I was safe. Always be safe.
I like that. And in terms of how do you plan, you know, because one question I get a lot from my audience, which is primarily women, as we've uh-huh. discussed, is that they all have very exciting ideas, creative ideas of what they want to do. And they have that gut feeling that this is where they should be. But then how do you get the courage to take that jump? You know, how do you know if this is not just, you know, right. me being bored in my job every day and I wanted to try something new, or is it that this is worth me pursuing?
So that's a very good question. So again, I bet most people who want to start out in an entrepreneurial venture, you have a multitude of ideas. Maybe you want to design custom artsy coasters. Maybe you have an idea for a new type of mm-hmm. shampoo. Maybe you have an e-commerce store you want to launch. So one of the things I do is I first identify what are 10 values that really resonate for me? That would be my dream business. Mm-hmm. So make a list of 10 values of your dream business. So for example, a value of this dream business might be, okay, I'm really good at this. Another one might be, it creates long-term subscription revenue, because subscription revenue is useful, right? A third one is, the market is in my city, so I'm in the right place. I don't have to relocate. A fourth one is, I have a unique skill. Maybe I'm a great designer. Maybe I have studied science and I understand what ingredients in a shampoo is going to create luscious hair. Make a skill of 10 things that matter. And it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. Some people may value passion. Some people may value engineering skills. What are these 10 things that matter to you? Now you take your ideas and you rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. Which of these 10 items this idea possesses? Even to this day, if I'm looking at a new project in Mindvalley, I look at some of these 10 things. Is it elevating our brand? Is it going to be a win for our authors? Is it going to produce recurring revenue? Is it going to give us a technological edge? Is it something that builds a competitive moat? Again, different for everyone, but rate it. Now, you have your ideas with a score. Each one has a score of 1 to 10, but you're not done yet. Now, look at those ideas, do some market research, and predict how much revenue can this bring 3 years out, mm-hmm. right? If you're selling coasters, I don't know how much revenue you're going to make. You're selling shampoos, great. You can get on shelves at supermarkets if you really market this well. Maybe you have a friend who has a spa who's willing to carry these shampoos. Estimate, but how much revenue are you going to make 3 years out? Now, the third one is, how difficult is it going to be? And again, this is an estimate. Difficulty is from a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being super easy, 10 being difficult. Now you multiply. Okay, so values. Okay, the 10 things that you care about. What is that score? Times revenue. And revenue, you want to put it in millions. So, you know, you're not multiplying it by 2 million, you're multiplying it by 2 if it's 2 million. And then the third one is ease, mm-hmm. 1 to 10. So I do this exercise, and now all my ideas have a score. So this quarter, my team and I rated 30 different new ideas we could pursue wow. in 2024. All of them had a score. And the score takes away emotion, but instantly we know exactly what to focus on. Mm-hmm. And now we have a higher predictor for success.
Wow. Okay. You literally just took my question away from me. I was going to say.
See, this is what happens when you interview an engineer. Everything I'm giving you has a mathematical basis.
It's so analytical.
I'm a nerd.
Me too. You now have a PhD in science.
Oh, you have a PhD in science, so you totally get this.
So I was going to say, it's so analytical. So you're really taking the emotions out. And do you think that's really important
in success? If you think the emotions are important, remember the first part where you're ranking things based on your 10 values? Then you put emotional rankings in there. So you might say, is this going to make me happy every single day? Sometimes an idea that's going to make you a lot of money isn't going to be the easiest or the happiest or the most joyous to work on, right? So if happiness matters to you, you put that there, but you figure out what matters to you.
Right, okay. Okay, I love that. Now, if we were to like spin a little bit off that, now we know how to take the leap.
Right.
And let's say someone is doing something they really love. But one thing I've heard a lot of women struggle with, I've struggled with personally as well, is so I worked in science. Obviously, I was a PhD, and then I went into business consulting. Then I went into tech startup. So I've seen a lot of different corporations work. Yeah. And one thing you struggle with is taking space as a woman, especially if you're the only one in the room who's female. I was in a lot of consulting teams of like 11 plus, and I'm the only woman in there. And taking space is an issue. Speaking out is an issue. What advice do you have for women? You've worked with women of all types.
So firstly, I sympathize. What you're talking about sounds a lot like the concept of imposter syndrome. We just released a program on this on Mind Valley by Shadé Zaran, whom I think you're acquainted
Shadé,
with.
Yes.
Shadé is a great teacher. 54% of women experience imposter syndrome. Now, with men, it's closer to 25%. Now, why do more women experience imposter syndrome than men? I think there are two reasons. Firstly, men tend to be overconfident and cockier.
Yes.
I remember a woman telling me, you know why I can't find a man to date? She said, I read a study that showed that 55% of American men think they could safely land a Boeing 747 if the pilot fainted. And she goes, men are so stupid over their own delusional over their own abilities. But that's actually very true. Mm-hmm. Men, I guess, biologically, tend to overestimate their own abilities. For example, 70% of men think that their driving skills are above average.
Oh, wow.
Right? So there's this weird thing about men. Women are a little bit more modest. Women are a little bit more in tune with themselves. And women, like it or not, are working in a corporate hierarchy that evolved from the U.S. military industrial hierarchy. So the way corporations are structured today actually is a post-World War II artifact from the military. And so it's very rigid. And it was designed for predominantly males. Feminine energy actually operates and collaborates in extremely different ways. And we can go to that later, right? So it is reasonable for women to have imposter syndrome. But what I want women to understand is this. Firstly, the men are cocky stupid. So they are not necessarily better than you. But secondly, the world is changing. And if you look at the workplace right now, feminine energies actually give you a competitive edge, not just in the workplace, but in politics. There was a study done during COVID. Countries run by women leaders did far better because during COVID, the whole world became an experiment.
Yes.
And it was striking how countries run by women leaders perform way, way, way better. Now, the same thing is happening in the corporate workplace. Let me give you an example. First, let's talk about what do we mean by feminine attributes in the workplace. So I want you to hold up your right hand. So there's a really interesting thing, right?
Okay.
If you, it has to do with prenatal testosterone.
Right.
So most men, this finger is taller than this finger.
Yeah, mine is not.
Yours is not,
no.
Right? So what this means is that when you were a fetus, your prenatal testosterone, the amount of testosterone in you when you were a fetus was less than me because, and obviously, right, most men have higher prenatal testosterone. It's not necessarily correlated with men and women. You can be a woman and you can have high prenatal testosterone. But it also turns out that this prenatal testosterone, not only does it cause a difference in finger size, it actually causes a difference in your brain. Okay? So, like it or not, a man and a woman's brain are actually different.
Yeah.
For example, if you look at SAT scores across the world, in 19 out of 20 countries, women do significantly better in the verbal portion. But in SAT scores, men do better at math.
Yes.
Okay, so the man's brain tends to be better at certain things. The woman's brain tends to be better at certain things. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, corporate hierarchy is an evolution from the military industrial structure, which was built for men. So men actually have a slightly easier time. But things are now getting more balanced. And now we are starting to see studies that show that feminine attributes, right, which are the opposite of prenatal testosterone, which are correlated with the feminine brain and the advantages of a woman's brain, actually give you an edge. So here are two things. Mm-hmm. First thing is, there was a study done on 10 million employees by Gallup. And these employees were asked to answer yes or no to the following question. My supervisor or manager cares about me as a person. Now, employees who answered yes to that, they performed better at work, they were more engaged,
I'm sure.
They had higher, they contributed more profit to the company. But let's look at this question. My supervisor or someone at work cares about me as a person. That is actually a predominantly feminine attribute.
Mm-hmm.
Women tend to be a lot more caring, a lot more nurturing to their peers.
Of course, yeah.
So if you're a woman leader, you already have that advantage. And studies now show that it causes the employees you lead to feel cared for, and this causes a huge boost in their performance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another study done by Sean Aker of Harvard showed that one of the biggest things that increase the culture of a company that boosts revenue is the act of gratitude and appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean Aker did a study in a company where he had all of the people come up to work, and before they started anything, they had to set an iPhone timer for 2 minutes and write an email expressing appreciation and gratitude for another coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly 2 minutes. And they had to type for 2 minutes. If it was less than 2 minutes, it was too short and therefore meaningless. If it was more than 2 minutes, it was too much work.
Mm-hmm.
So he did this as a trial with a company. And this company, I believe it was an insurance company, their revenues were stagnating at $650 million. In 18 months, they went up to $950 million.
Oh, wow.
The number of applicants applying to join this company went up 270%. Google flew down to see what they were doing. All they did was created a culture of appreciation. And appreciation and gratitude is another feminine attribute.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying that men don't do that. Mm-hmm. Remember, we're talking about differences in our brain here, which are scientific and measurable. But what I'm trying to get at is that women hold a certain set of powerful skills in appreciation, in nurturing, in compassion, in mm-hmm. empathy, in listening, in understanding, which modern corporate science is showing make massive differences mm-hmm. in a company. So if you are a leader and you happen to be a woman, never, ever, ever try to act like a male. Embrace those feminine attributes. Bring those attributes to the company, because I'm telling you, they are a huge advantage right now in the way work is evolving. And let's together evolve work to bring these attributes in, because these attributes actually create more democratic workplaces, workplaces with greater empathy, workplaces where people are happier, workplaces where people are healthier and more appreciated.
Mm-hmm. And less churn rate, I'm sure. People will stay on for longer.
Exactly.
And if I can add to this, I love the way you explain these two things. And the analytical brain is crazy, by the way, Vishen, the way you explain things. You're such a good teacher. But I want to add to this as well, listening skill, because I personally did this exercise when I was at work, and where you were paired up, male and female, and you were given 2 minutes,
right.
2 minutes to speak to the other person, and the other person can only respond with facial features. They're not allowed to use words. And then it switches, and the other person speaks for 2 minutes. And then you will see the women struggle to fill the 2 minutes. They can't take space for 2 minutes and just talk at somebody.
Right.
But the listening, they're incredible at it. And obviously it's the reverse for men. They're very comfortable speaking.
Right.
But every time it's for them to stay quiet, you can see them struggling. Their mouth is about to open and they have to close, because listening is not something that men can do very easily, naturally.
Right. Right. Men or human beings who have a primarily more masculine
traits. More masculine traits.
Versus feminine traits.
Yes, for sure. And you're right. I think it's just, we are seeing the move now where companies are starting to understand that we need to value these traits better. Great. So you've mentioned Mindvalley. We all know how Mindvalley is this huge platform where you talk a lot about spirituality. So tell us a bit more, because I think people are still very unsure about what is spirituality. How do I bring more of it into my day-to-day?
That's a really interesting topic, right? So Mindvalley, firstly, is a platform for creating better humans.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you want, whether it's a better dating life, it's a better body, it's a better mind, it's more money, we bring in the best teachers. But spirituality mm-hmm. is approximately 35% of the content on our platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big chunk of it. Spirituality is a really interesting concept. And I recently had a friend ask me, Vishen, what books would you recommend for me to read for me to be more spiritual?
Right. Now,
this was a woman. And I said, well, define spiritual, because everyone defines it differently. And she's like, I don't know, just spiritual. So you want to know what I shared with her?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a general advice. Firstly, let's talk about what spiritual means, okay? There are many different definitions. My definition of spiritual, which is the Mind Valley definition, is understanding that we are more than just our physical bodies, that there's a part of us that's connected to something greater, and there's a part of us that's connected to each other. Mm-hmm. Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the incredible series of books, Conversations with God, said the number one hallmark of a spiritual being is unity, is recognizing that you and I are far more connected than we are, than what the world tells us. So much of what alienates us in the world is our cultural stories. Culture and memory can often be the opposite of spirituality. Our cultural stories say that we are ex-religion, we are ex-nationality, that we, our cultures are different. But spirituality tells us that no, we are both particles of God experiencing this human plane to understand ourselves as God's experiencing itself. And because of this, we are both connected. So for example, in the Conversations with God books, Neil Donald Walsh gives a very practical exercise that I guarantee if you do this exercise, you feel this essence of unity and it will change your life. He says, the next time you're walking through the street or going to work and you see something that annoys you, look at it, look at that person and say, there I go again. For example, you see and I did this, I was living in New York back then. I remember walking the streets of New York, I see a homeless guy and he's begging for cash and I can see that he's an alcoholic and he smells of liquor. Mm-hmm. And rather than condemn him or judge him, I look at him and I say, there I go again, being a smelly, drunk, homeless person. I keep walking, there I go again, being a litter bug. There I go again, being an inconsiderate, loud person on the subway. And by the end of half an hour, I actually had tears in my eyes because I felt so connected to every other life form I saw in New York. If you try this exercise, you cannot help but start feeling beyond yourself. You just got a glimpse of spirituality. And that glimpse will often impact you as much as, say, going on a 2-3-day spiritual workshop. Because the essence of spirituality is deep connection and unity. You cannot hurt another person because hurting them is hurting yourself. Mm-hmm. You want to give to others because giving to others is giving to yourself. You understand that you're part of a larger whole. And there's this mesmerizing impact of that because you start understanding just how powerful you are, just how powerful everyone else is. When you truly embrace this, you would never take another person's life to defend your religion or culture. Mm-hmm. If I was part of a country and they drafted me for the military and they said, you got to go and attack this opposing country because their culture is in a war with our culture, I would rather be jailed and put behind bars. I would give up my culture, give up my religion rather than take another life because that other life is also me. Mm-hmm. When you understand this, you have moved in a big way towards a spiritual understanding. This is the opening to all other mystical and spiritual experiences. Mm-hmm. It is this feeling of unity. Any religious dogma that takes away from unity didn't come from the religious teacher. Mm-hmm. It came from men, mostly men, 2,000 years ago, trying to interpret the religious teacher, mm-hmm. but who were nowhere at their level. Mm-hmm. So that's the first step.
Yeah.
Now, how to be spiritual? I prescribed a simple exercise. There are a number of really great books you can read. I think Neil Donald Walsh's book is a great one, Conversations with God. It's mm-hmm. a channeled work. So that's a wonderful book. There are 4 books in the series, book 1, 2, 3, and book 4. There's also a program on it on Mind Valley called Awaken the Species. Read book 1, and if you like it, you might want to read the other books. But mm-hmm. it's a channeled work. Neil was a homeless man. He had had 6 failed marriages. He had broken his neck. He was living in a tent in a park in Oregon. And he had this habit where he would write an angry letter to anyone who had hurt him. So an angry letter to the woman who left him, an angry letter to the boss who fired him, an angry letter to the government. Then he would crush it up and toss it away. And one day he wrote an angry letter to God. Why are you doing this to me?
Mm-hmm.
But before he could put his pen down, he felt something grab his hand and say, do you really want to know?
Ooh.
And then he goes, what the hell is going on? And he felt his hand. And this force said, you use the word hell a lot. How about understanding what the heaven is going on? And this started this process of, it's called automatic writing.
Mm-hmm.
And he put together sheet after sheet after sheet after sheet of all of these incredible writings where he was having a conversation with God. And in one of the writings, God actually said, and this is going to be a book because other people need to read this too. So he goes to multiple publishers. 20 of them reject him. One reads it, actually reads these like handwritten notes and starts crying and goes, this is so moving. I want to publish you. So they publish a book called Conversations with God. It stays in the New York Times for 5 years.
Wow.
And it becomes one of the most transformative books in the world. Personally changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be spiritual? I prescribed an exercise. I prescribed a book. And here's what I want people to know. Spirituality, after you understand unity, the essence of spirituality is not to step away from the world. It's to embrace the world. In Conversations with God, Neil actually says this, and this is going to come as a bit of a slap in the face for many people who think they're exploring spirituality. He said, don't waste your human life trying to unravel all the secrets of the universe. You're going to understand that when you die, because death isn't the end of it. Spend this life truly embracing being human. And he says this in book 2, seek sex, seek fame, seek money, seek power, seek all of these beautiful aspects of humanity and stop judging them.
Mm-hmm.
Sex is one of the most wonderful aspects of life. Money is glorious. Power is beautiful because you have influence. Seek all of these things that priests and religious leaders have told us to shun because they wanted to control us.
Mm-hmm.
Seek those, but seek these with the understanding that you and everyone else around you is one, so you would never hurt another person. But with your power, with your attractiveness, with your money, with your fame, you can uplift as many people as possible. But go out there and seek it. So I tell people, don't waste your time trying to be a monk. Monks serve a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They teach us about life. You don't have to be a monk. You don't have to go on a 12-day silent retreat. Why? Embrace being human. You have a mouth. You're meant to communicate. You're not meant to sit in a frickin' yoga pose or cross-legged in meditation for 12 days. Stop it. That's nonsense.
Mm.
I don't buy that stuff at all. There are faster ways to being to a spiritual path. And it's merely understanding that we are all one and that so much of what restricts us and holds us are dogma from the past. To be spiritual is to truly be liberated. The people who tell you what you're doing is not right, you're not being faithful to your religion or your culture, are simply saying, look at me, I have bigger chains than you.
Mm. Oh, that is so good. That's a very good comeback. I'm going to use it from now on. But
that quote is by Sal Misadora, a wonderful spiritual teacher, now passed, whom I got to know.
Oh, amazing. Well, I know in the interest of time, we're going to address the last thing we really wanted to talk about, which is about dating. So, you know, being the first man on the podcast, obviously we have to ask you about this.
Right.
But where are the good men, Vision? How do we find
them? It's easy to find good men. I think, and it's easy to find great women. I think the way dating is structured in the world today, there's so much awful skepticism. And so people often don't give each other a chance. Okay, so since we have a short amount of time, I want to prescribe two things that I want to suggest. Firstly, if you're a woman, and you could be a man as well, and if you want to date a male, there are two books which I think are worth reading. One is David Deida's book, The Way of the Superior Man.
Mm-hmm.
It is an incredible book on masculine energy. And surprisingly, more women are buying this book today than men.
Okay.
According to Deida, I got in a call with him, and he shared this with me, and I was flabbergasted. Read that book, because you will understand good male energy.
Mm-hmm.
You will learn to tell the difference. David Deida breaks it down in the most powerful way. Right? And masculine energy is powerful. It's intoxicating. It's needed. Women need that. But sometimes because of the way the world is constructed, a man's masculine energy is sometimes forced to turn down.
Mm.
This is to the detriment of the male and the female.
Mm-hmm.
Read David Deida's Way of the Superior Man, and it'll help you identify men who have the right masculine energy, which is nurturing, which is healing, which elevates a woman. Second, Mark Manson wrote a book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, right?
Yes.
Bestseller. Mm-hmm. But what many people don't know is that he also wrote a book on dating. And I met Mark and I met his wife. His book on dating is called Models, Attract Women Through Honesty.
Okay.
Okay, let me say it looking at the camera. His book on dating is called Models, Attract Women Through Honesty. And it's basically a book for men with the philosophy that we should be completely open and transparent with women at all time. No games. Mm. Be open and transparent. Unfortunately, if you actually look at the world, often when a man is open and transparent with a woman, he is shut down.
Yes.
The men who are manipulative, they know how to manipulate. And they're the men who often get the woman. I really wish women would appreciate truth and honesty and not see it as weakness. So Mark Manson wrote this book because he was fed up with dating books for men that were talking about how to come across, you know, in a sexual way, how to manipulate women. He's like, no, I believe in truth and honesty and openness. So I asked Mark's wife, what attracted you to Mark? So Mark's wife is Brazilian, beautiful Brazilian woman. She said, I was in a bar in Brazil and Mark came up to me and I'd never met a man who was so pure, honest, and direct. He was just so direct, and I found that such a turn-on. Honest, respectfully honest. And so Mark wrote that book. It became actually an undercover book that so many men fully loved, but you don't really hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because his other book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, blew up, right? And he got associated with it. So, woman, if you read both those books, David Deida's Way of the Superior Man and How to Win Women Through Truth and Honesty by Mark Manson, I think it will help you understand what to look for when you're on a date. Okay, so those two books. Now, the second thing is this. Go on lots of dates.
Yeah.
I know it's painful, but go on lots of dates. Let me explain why. So I have a friend, and she's this phenomenal woman in Silicon Valley, African-American, and she got married at the age of 17. Don't ask me how.
Okay.
I don't know how that happened, but by the time before she was 30, she and her husband divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this woman is one of the top growth hackers in Silicon Valley. She has a brilliant analytical mind and she takes apps and she blows them up. And she was feeling lonely after her divorce and she decided, how can I find my next husband? I want to be in a committed relationship. And she decided to give herself a challenge. She was going to go on 3 dates a week for 10 weeks.
Oof.
Okay. So she said, so I asked her, how did it go? And she says, I'm dating three guys a week for 10 weeks. That's 30 dates.
30.
I tell her, did you meet anyone? And she goes, no. I met a lot of interesting friends.
Yeah.
I met a lot of people who bought the heck out of me. I felt exhausted and I felt sometimes I didn't want to do it, but I did it anyway because that was my commitment, 30 dates. After 10 weeks, I'd not found any guy who really lit me up. But then 2 weeks later, I met a guy. And he was everything I wanted. And we've now been married for 10 years.
How?
So she explained this to me. She said, when you put in the effort, okay, when you put in the effort, when you tell the universe, I am meeting lots of men. I am prepared to go through the work. I'm prepared to identify what I want and what I don't want. You're narrowing your band of desires. All the great teachers who talk about manifesting say that you got to make a decision. And when you start getting your decisions fine-tuned, you're constantly manifesting. When you get your decisions fine-tuned, that's when you get what you want. Most people, I believe, are not finding the right person because they don't know what they want. When you commit to going on these dates and you're understanding what I like, what I don't like, oh, he did that and that's freaking sexy. Oh, he did that and I don't want to see, I don't want to have that. You narrow down your decisions. You become clearer and clearer and clearer on what you want. And at the same time, you're telling yourself, look, men are abundant.
Yes.
I'm going to hold my value, but men are abundant.
Yeah.
And I believe that's why she met the man of her dreams, her husband of 10 years. 2 weeks after she did this exercise. So the point is, go on a lot of dates. I know it's going to be crazy. I know you're going to feel that you don't want it sometimes, but it's a form of training. You are fine-tuning your receivers of understanding what you want, but you're also giving commitment to the universe that you're willing to go out there and do the research and be open to someone stepping in.
Amazing. So final thoughts, Vishen, any message you want to say to women out there?
I'm so grateful that that woman exists. I have many female friends. I have an equal number of female friends as male friends. I think it is an absolute myth that men and women cannot just be friends, mm-hmm. right? And I find that my life is so much more enriched because I have such close personal female friends as well as male friends who elevate me. And so I love women. I love having women as friends. I love being in relationships with women. I have a daughter, and I just love experiencing that dance of masculine and feminine energy. I think it's so healing. It's so beautiful. It's so necessary. And it is exactly what spirituality is about. Spirituality is about unity. And the ultimate act of unity is when a man and woman come together, right? You're literally able to experience the essence of God. You're literally able to create life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why dating, sex, relationships are actually one of the purest and most beautiful ways to experience our true nature of spirituality. And I wish people would not have as many hang-ups about it as they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Vishen, for being here. And hopefully next time we'll do a longer version.
Thank you.
Thank you.